It's a momentous occasion, though.
It's your birthday?
No.
Oh.
I get the chair.
You do have the chair. I'm sitting on the, what do we call this?
Wobble stool.
Wobble stool. I'm on the wobble stool today. Mark has got the chair. First time ever.
Feels good.
I always sit in the chair.
Feels good to be the king.
It's more comfortable. I do feel a little higher. I'm sitting up higher.
It really asserts a little more posture.
You said your back was hurting you a little bit. I felt bad.
I'm getting old.
Normally, it's just like, I get the chair. If Ryan is listening right now, he knows very well. When he used to spend the night at my house as a kid, I would take all the pillows. I don't know why, but I would just take all the pillows. And yeah, so every time you came over to record, I would just take the chair because the chair's mine, Mark. Today, I gave it to you.
It's nice of you.
It is nice of me.
Shows you're maturing.
This is momentous. Momentous.
It only took 35 years for you to learn how to share.
Yeah, that's true. Took a while. Kind of want it back.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we confidently declare victory when we are not even close to completing our shape. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. Go on.
So I was away in North Carolina. I was visiting a capoeira event or a dance fighting event, and then I got to spend some time with my sister, and I brought her Abstract. We played, and as a good brother, I was like, haha, I got there, confidently place a tile, say, I made my shape, flip it over only to see I'd built like a rotation or a mirror image of the shape that I was trying to build. Wasn't great.
Perspective. You and I have talked a lot about that in the last couple of weeks.
We'll probably get into this at some point, but I didn't find it to be a problem of the orientation of the game. I just kept on like in my head, just reversing, not even like building the mirror image, but I would just keep like moving two blocks in my shape to a spot where they weren't supposed to be.
And if it's not clear, Mark is talking about our game, Abstract, tentatively named Abstract.
It's a working title.
That's just what we're calling it.
Are you sure the working title is not hors d'oeuvres?
It is not. It is not. We're going to talk about titles in just a second when we play a game, but it is not hors d'oeuvres. You got to get away from that, man.
I'm doing it now just because it annoys you.
You did almost have me the other day when you were talking about accessibility and, you know, like using a stick to move the piece.
I think that's true, but I don't think you have to call it hors d'oeuvres.
No, we're not. But I did want to play today a game about names. We are in the tank currently thinking about names. We've got a document going where we're just brainstorming descriptive names, evocative names, words that we're just making up, inventive. I've been doing a lot of research on names. And somebody puts a name on the list, and then I look and I see, well, is there a game already that exists called that? So this is a game called Not a Game. It's two rounds. In each round, I'm going to give you three games. All of the names are names that were from our brainstorm document, and then I went and looked whether or not they're a game. For two of the three, they are a game, and these are the actual descriptions. For one of them on this list, it is not the game. I made it up. So round one, first game, push. In push, players in turn shoot their discs from the edge of the board, trying to land them in the holes. That's the Board Game Geek description for push. Or maybe it's not. Maybe I made that up. Second game, Hall of Mirrors, where nothing is as it seems. Players use line of sight to collect treasures and escape before they're caught. Game number three, slide. In slide, you group numbers in your grid to make them disappear. Rid yourself of cards to score the lowest number. Those are the three games. Push, Hall of Mirrors, and slide. Two of them are games. Which one is not a game?
I feel sad. I'm pretty confident that Hall of Mirrors is a game, which hurts my soul a little bit because we put it in our document.
That's why I picked that one.
We're playing the metagame with Jason here. I'm going to guess that slide is not the game.
Slide is your guess.
Slide is my guess.
The answer is Hall of Mirrors is not a game.
Oh, he got me.
It's open.
Let's go.
You can still call Abstract Game Hall of Mirrors.
I'm all in on Hall of Mirrors now.
You like my description though, huh? Players use line of sight.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Where everything is not as it seems.
You're really working on your marketing strategies.
I am.
Tune in next week.
Well, that's clever. Yeah. It's a good promo for our next show. Round two. Here's three more games, Mark. You've got one more chance to redeem yourself. Obviously, you owe me Boba already.
No, we never shook on that. Summer spending is tight.
Round two. Here are three new games. One of them is not a game. First one is Shift, a sliding tile puzzle where you're trying to move six of your pieces to the other side of the board. Second game, Frey, set in a vibrant world. It's a fast-paced, one-on-one game fighting for control of a battlefield. And number three is Or Else. In Or Else, players roll dice and battle for control by making bold demands. Will you comply or call their bluff and risk it all? So, three games, Shift, Frey, and Or Else. Which one is not a game?
It's funny that Or Else is on this list because there were people talking about Or Else at the playtest that I went to on Monday.
Really?
Really.
Oh.
So, that's a game.
Okay.
Which is interesting because based on how they're written, I would have guessed that one would have been not a game because it has the same dash.
Mm.
I'm looking for context clues. Well, I know Shift is on our internal list for possible names.
Every one of these games in both rounds are.
Oh.
All names I took right from our brainstorm doc.
Oh. I haven't read the whole thing yet.
Yeah. Typical.
I do appreciate that both Hors d'oeuvres and Shish Kebab is also on the list.
They're on the list. I put them there.
I'm going to go with Frey is a great, like, that's a great description for Frey. It's a good use of, like, what Frey could mean. But I think that one's not the game.
Frey. You're going with Frey.
Correct.
You are not correct.
Dang.
Or Else is the game I made up. Now, you are telling me at an event, somebody talked about a game called Or Else, but there is no game called Or Else on Board Game Geek. I made up the description for that game. And in fact, I intentionally tried to make the style look different. You talked about, I figured you would be looking at that for clues, and I intentionally made the dash different and italicized it, hoping you thought I just copy and pasted that in.
Funny. I might be wrong. Maybe the game I'm thinking of is No Thanks.
Maybe. But Or Else is not a game on Board Game Geek. However, after writing this description, I now want to make a game called Or Else, where you make demands of other players, and it's up to you to call their bluff or not. Pivot.
No.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. So I got you on both rounds. I'm excited.
Well done.
Thank you.
I did play a game that was kind of similar to Or Else. It was very fun at the playtest night.
Mark just advocating for a pivot.
No.
Or Else.
Well, it's not our game. I played a game that is similar to what your description of Or Else is here.
Right. Oh. Okay.
That was an actual game that somebody brought to the thing.
Gotcha. Well, before we get into that, before we talk about the places we've been, the things we've done, the playtesting, today's episode is sponsored by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. In their most recent video, they talk about why you shouldn't judge a book, or in this case, a board game, by its cover. I did this a while back with a game called Archduke, which now I really enjoy. You can check out the games that Board Game Casual judged before playing on their YouTube channel. It's like a podcast, but a little prettier. Give Board Game Casual a view at Board Game Casual on YouTube at Board Game Casual channel. Where are we?
Playtesting a lot.
We are. 3D printing a lot. I got a factory going out in the garage right now. We're ready to go to scale at this point.
It sounds expensive.
Yeah, I haven't done the math.
A whole new variety of self-publishing.
Shipping will kill us. But playtesting.
Yes, but wider playtesting than we've ever done before, right? We've done, when we were working on Animal Kingdom or other small projects that we did in our earlier learning before Abstract, all of our playtesting was internal.
And it was all on playingcards.io.
And so part of ramping up our playtesting has been trying to put the game physically in front of non-Misplay members.
Correct. Before we go into talking about the playtests, let's create a visual for the audience right now so that they understand how to play Abstract Game, so that they can, you know, see the board in front of them. You can go, again, you can go to Blue Sky, you can look at a picture, but let's just paint a picture of what people would see if they sat down to play Abstract Game right now. There's a grid. It's a 7x7 grid. And then there's tiles off to the side. Currently, we're playing with a shared pool. And then each player has a secret pattern. It's a 5-block shape. And then in between them, there's also kind of like this grid marker that explains which side of the board is down and what the possible shapes your opponent is holding. Right now, we're only playing with 6. So when I'm playing, I have one, you have one. So I know that yours is one of those 5 because I know which one is mine. When you play the game, we put a single tile, what we call a tile or a fragment, in the center of the board, just so that we start with something there. Then a player takes a turn, Mark. What do they do?
A player will select a tile from the shared pool and place it on the board. They can place it anywhere on the board. They can play adjacent to the starting tile that Jason placed at the beginning, or they can place it anywhere else on the board. If a player plays their tile adjacent to another tile, they'll perform one of the actions or board manipulations
that are tied to the color. So if you place a blue tile,
it pushes an adjacent tile one spot orthogonally adjacent.
If you play an orange tile,
it pushes an adjacent tile one direction diagonally.
And if you play a gray tile,
you swap the locations of the gray tile with an adjacent tile.
And so this will repeat. This will go back and forth between players until they complete their pattern, their secret pattern. They'll reveal their pattern and be like, aha, gotcha.
Put it in the list. Gotcha.
Gotcha. There's a name. But that's how the game is played.
So we kind of have 3 categories of what our playtesting looks like right now. We have our internal playtesting on playing cards. We have our, what I'm calling the friends and family discount, where we loop in friends, family, whoever we can drag who has to sit down and play with us. And then I'm going to call it playtesting with the pros, where we have gotten to show the game to other game designers, other playtesters who are into board games. And it's very different. Like, all 3 are very different, very useful, but I think drive answers to different questions.
And I will say, I am incredibly jealous that you got to be the first one to take the game to a Golden Gate Game Makers playtest.
It was a lot of fun. It was a little bit intimidating. I was sitting there with the friend that came with me and was like, I'm a little nervous. Like, I don't want to teach the game. I feel like an imposter here. But everybody was very nice and very supportive. There was a lot of folks who kind of went out of their way, since it was our first time presenting the game, to make sure that we got to show it and have somebody play it. It was a really supportive and useful time spent.
And we'll build up to that. Let's talk first about the internal playtesting that we've been doing currently, because that has been driving a lot of the rules and the mechanics and even design choices that we're thinking about in our head.
Well, I would say that's the internal testing is our experimental lab, right? Like you said, the internal testing really is driving the mechanical, the rules, the presentation decisions. It was our internal testing that changed from place a tile and remove an adjacent tile. It was the internal play testing that has been imagining and discussing like what the configuration of the board should be or what the size of the board should be. All of the nuts and bolts mechanical pieces are really what we're trying to address with internal testing. I think the more internal testing we've done, the more I've been like, it matters that I think we enjoy playing Abstract. And it's by far my favorite game that we've worked on. That being said, I don't think it matters like, what we think more subjectively about the game. I think the real role of internal testing are the objective components, mechanics, rules, setting up so that we can present it to a wider audience in a more natural player-centered setting.
Yeah, and the example I'll give is right now when we're thinking about board size, whether that's 5x5, 6x6, 7x7, we need to have more people give us opinions than just the six of us in a box, because we all have our own opinions. And I really think, you know, it should be this many squares, and somebody else thinks it should be this many squares, because you don't want to have situations where you're playing against the wall. Because when you're pushed all the way to the edge and you can't place on the other side because there's a border, is that a problem or is that just part of the game? We've talked about using an unlimited size board where there is no restriction that you could just place anywhere. But I really want more opinions from people who aren't us so that we can better understand what is more fun, what is more interesting from a strategy perspective.
And what non-us players find compelling.
Right.
It has been very interesting. I'm not sure how much you've gotten to show the game or play the game with other people. I think I've done about an equal amount of testing with non-Misplay members as I have with Misplay members at this time. And it's so different what grabs non-Misplay eyes. Because we are a very specific niche of people.
And I haven't seen it yet, because I have been largely doing all the internal playtesting, whether that's with I'm So Bad or Colacoma, or, you know, even you in person. We played in the cafe the other day. Picture on Blue Sky if you want to check it out. Mark and I playing in a cafe. Some of the most important things that we've resolved through this playtesting, I think we've landed on, at least for now, five tiles in your pattern, whereas previously it was four. And we solved the orientation, the perspective issue that was driving me nuts on playing cards. I could not wrap my head around it, mostly because I have such trouble spinning pieces on playing cards by holding down the Z and the X. Oh my goodness. I'm So Bad. Still mad at me. I'm So Mad.
I know we've talked about it before, but I do think that is one of the limitations of testing remotely on playing cards. It is harder to account for the way the game physically plays on playing cards. And I think there's been like a lot of like shouting across the room at each other about the orientation question. And it is very simple to answer in person once you have the physical game in front of you. And I think our solution is satisfying. And every non-Misplay person that I have tested with, the orientation solution that we've discussed has worked for them.
Well, let's go into that. Let's move towards that. What you're calling your friends and family discount, the Costco membership of the Misplay.
You know, the round one of playtesters who get to be in the thank yous, the acknowledgments.
Oh, yeah.
I have played this game with my sister in person with physical pieces. I have played this game with friends in the East Bay with physical pieces. And I have played with a few friends that are non-board gamers.
Oh, I didn't know that. Where did you find them?
They're my friends.
Oh, okay.
We were hanging out at a barbecue and we played the game.
Okay. I forget some people don't play board games.
A couple of notes from, so with my sister I would qualify as a person who plays games, and so she had really good feedback. She seemed to enjoy playing the game. Now, you know, friends and family discount, right? Friends and family disclaimer, she's a little bit obligated to like the game and support the project,
of course.
You can subscribe on Patreon at patreon.com/misplay.
Also, next episode.
But we were able to play, and she was the person that I used as my test case for the orientation fix, where we arbitrarily decide this spot is down on the board, this orientation is down for the pattern cards that we're trying to build, and seemed to effectively solve the orientation problem.
Yeah, I mean, I have no orientation problem now that we've played it in person with that fix, where you just identify, you just put a color code on the bottom and say red is down, and then the bottom of the board, also this is the red line, bottom of the card, red line, everything lines up perfectly. It doesn't matter. You sit on any one of those four spots, the zero, the 90, the 180, the 270, you can see the shape exactly as it's going to appear on the board to everybody else.
And then kind of, we played a few games. We would play a couple of games. We would switch seats to test how bothersome the mirror image would be for a new player, someone who had never played the game before. And then I was just like, well, here are the questions that I hope you can respond to. And it was those questions, kind of very similar to the way that we would do our internal playtest protocol. We had our guiding questions, we had feedback about those specific questions, and then we had room for other feedback. I'm going to grab a little bit of the feedback that my sister shared, and then I think the thing that I have found most interesting to me about getting feedback from non-misplay playtesters is, what do they find captivating, interesting, or compelling in this game? And one of my sister's observations, I'm going to use the quote, but I'm going to then rephrase a little bit to give a little more context. So in the first game my sister and I played, I asked her a little bit of just like, oh, what'd you think of this game? How did you feel about playing? And she was like, it was frustrating. I kept getting blocked from doing what I wanted to do. I could either try to salvage or block you, but not both. And she did qualify that it was frustrating in like the good way. So I would maybe offer it was strategically challenging to find the best path, but I didn't want to misconstrue words or put words in her mouth.
Sure.
Those are the types of observations that I think will be most valuable to us, because it'll be very apparent if we somehow stumble across something that breaks the game at this point. The rules are relatively simple for the game. The constraints of the board are relatively simple for the game. And so I think we're at a point where it's very feasible for anybody to play around to completion. So without the game breaking, where do we need to turn our eye? And I think it is this eye for, what do players enjoy? What do players find compelling and interesting? And then if we're seeing the things that are being enjoyed and compelling not being the places where we want it, then we turn our eye to, how do we change things so that we can put the enjoyable and compelling factors more into the spaces that we want them to be in the game.
And the place that stands out for me that kind of fits what you're talking about there is trying to find that sweet spot between perfect information and having no idea what shape your opponent is trying to make. I feel like, and we've tested this, if I know 100% what your pattern is at the start of the game, you can't make your pattern. You just can't do it. If I know what you're trying to do from the start, I will not allow you to do that. The only way you could win is if I make like a really big misplay, and then we talk about it on the show. And I think the sweet spot is somewhere around, I don't want it to be, let's imagine we had 50 patterns in the game and we each pull one and we play the game. I have no idea what your pattern, it could be anything. It's one of 50. And that's no fun either. It's like, then I would just play my own pattern. There'd be no point in me trying to stop whatever it is you're trying to do, because I don't know. I could be pushing my pieces into perfect spots for you. There's no way to know. So I think trying to find that sweet spot of, I think I know what his pattern is. In the beginning of the game, like somewhere around the neighborhood of like 1 out of 5, like 20% chance. And then by the end of the game, oh, it's a 50-50. It's either this pattern or that pattern. Which one do I think? And then make choices based on what I've learned playing the game. We know that the game isn't compelling if you know everything, and it's not compelling if you don't know anything. So that's one of the areas where I'm looking to get some feedback when I start doing outside playtesting.
Well, I know you were talking about the upper end being having it narrowed down to a 50-50. The way that I had been testing with my sister and my less gamer inclined friends was having a field of 4, because it was before we had switched to 5 tile shapes. But we had 4 options of, here are the 4 patterns that are going to be available this game. We would shuffle them, distribute 1 to each person, and then by the end of the first available shared row, I felt like I did live in that narrow 50-50 range of knowing what shape. I think the other big thing that will be informative for us in making direct decisions about the rules and mechanics is how players respond to tile acquisition. It's, I think, the thing that has the most options available to us and comes with the widest set of responses for non-misplay gamers. My sister enjoyed the shared row, and we were playing with a random distribution of 10 tiles being laid out. I played two games with my non-gamer friends, one where we had a random distribution, and they really didn't like the game where it was randomly distributed because they had a disproportionate number of like gray tiles or something like that. The non-gamers much preferred having a specific number of each color in the shared row. So like a predetermined what the row will be.
So this is, imagine in the shared pool, there are four of each color. There's 12 tiles. They're four of each color. So that's what you've been calling your fixed distribution. The random would be just pull 12 tiles out of the bag and put them down, and they could technically all be blue, or 90% blue and a gray. They could be.
Yes. So I think that's one of the things that we as internal testers have been going back and forth about. And that might be one of the things where I'm like, well, let's leave that up to the people who are going to be the consumers of the game. Because I feel relatively strongly about it being a fixed row, but not so strongly that if we took it out and 95% of the players are like, it's got to be a random row, I don't care that much. Also, if they're going to buy it because it's a random row and wouldn't buy it if it's a fixed row, easy choice.
Yes, and I'm on the other side of that. I think it should be random. Right now, if the only two choices are what we're talking about right now, I think it should be random. But like you, I'm willing to be wrong. If I don't know if there's anything that I am so tied to that just cannot change. If enough people gave feedback and said, this needs to be different. I just posted this, but I'm a terrible game designer. I just posted this on I was reminded this week talking to I'm So Bad about this quote from The West Wing that is from other places. And it goes, there go my people. I must find out where they're going so I can lead them. Sometimes that's how I am still operating as a game designer, because I just want to create a fun game. I don't care what it is. Play hide and seek if you want. Put it in a box. You guys want to buy that? All right, we'll do it.
We could just call this game hide and seek. It's not actually a bad name given what the game does.
Yeah, it does kind of fit.
Put it on the list.
God, I have to. I have to put everything on the list. That's the whole point of brainstorming. There are no bad ideas except for shish kebab.
Still on the list.
All right, let's move away from the family and friends, and let's talk about testing for the first time at a Golden Gate Game Makers event at Victory Point Cafe, a cafe I went to before to see previous guest Randy O'Connor talk about components.
So I took the game out to Victory Point.
And if you want to, I keep throwing people the Blue Sky because, you know, next week's episode's all about marketing. But if you go to Blue Sky, you can see pictures of the game that Mark brought. And if you go down just a little bit further, you can see the 3D printer making those pieces. We're all about showing the process.
And you handed off the prototype to me at your and my live playtest that we did together. And then we came up with the guiding questions that we were going to bring. So we brought, what do you think of the designed orientation? It was kind of the final confirmation of that as the solution. And then internal testing, I was kind of like a version behind in the testing that I did with my friends and family. I was still playing with four tile shapes. So you gave me the things to test five tile shapes at Victory Point. We decided that we would look for feedback about the designs of the shapes and the change from four to five. And again, different groups of people, it's very different to test and play with them. I think going forward, one of the things that we're going to need to consider is how we teach the game. I think we need practice in teaching the game. Every time I have taught the game to friend, family, non-gamer, people at Victory Point Cafe, I have run into clarifying questions that were not covered in the way that we present the how to play the game, which I think is fine, but the more practice you get and can minimize the need for clarifying questions, one, makes our rulebook better, and two, it is a race against time. You only have so much time when we're at first exposure playtest hall. If you use 20 minutes answering questions, you only have so much time left with the players for actual play. So I think that's a thing that we want to set aside and take as something that we are learning about and trying to figure out how to do better. But the playtesters at Victory Point Cafe were mostly other game designers and had very insightful things to say about the game. I was incredibly humbled by both the quality of the feedback and the interest and support in the game. Having been the person who was presenting a game for the first time, it was very reassuring to hear from other game designers that, oh, your game seems like it's in a good place. Someone said it's even more refined than where his was, and he also had a tiling puzzle game. So I want to highlight a little bit of feedback that we got from the playtest at Victory Point Cafe, because one, it is contradictory to feedback that I got from other playtesters, and two, I think that's going to become a common occurrence as we play with more people. You'll get more conflicting data. And so I think it's worth spending a little bit of time thinking about how and what are we going to do with conflicting data. Because one, the players that I had at Victory Point Cafe wanted the random distribution in the shared pool, whereas my friends and non-gamer friends liked the equal distribution.
And we'll start with, no matter what, everything right now is too small of a sample size to make any real decisions with the game. But let's say that we played it another 100 times, 50 with non-gamers and 50 with gamers, and we're still kind of in between. Then we'd have a decision to make. Thinking about, I would think, who we're trying to target. Right? Who is the game for? Is it for the people that are more familiar with games and want to play this, I don't want to say competitively, but a little bit more cutthroat and want to think deeper about the strategy? Or do we want it to be more lighthearted and fun for people who aren't necessarily board gamers?
And that's, I think, where we need some way to aggregate and interpret the qualitative piece. Because after they gave that feedback of, we would prefer the random distribution, they went through and kind of did the cost-benefit analysis for us of what does the fixed row give you? What does the random distribution row give you? And in summary, like, the random distribution gives a little bit more wacky variance to how the game is going to play, which some players might enjoy, whereas the fixed distribution in the shared pool will appeal more, they thought, would appeal more to kind of the more strategic, abstract, focused strategy players. After they responded to kind of our guiding questions, I did ask if they had other feedback or questions or things, and I know you're really concerned about this right now, or at least you seem to be. They were wondering if there is a go-first advantage in our game.
I think it's very easy for somebody to say, oh, there is, and for another person to go, no, there's not. It doesn't matter. We won't know until we've played the game 1,000 times, and then we look at that. We are tracking it now. You and I are both writing down who goes first, how many turns it took, and what color won. So we are tracking that data. So we'll find out, because, yeah, I mean, I can't think of a game where I don't want to go first. Like, like any game we've ever played, I want to go first. I don't.
Humble brag, I beat Jason 3 times in our playtest.
No, you didn't beat, you destroyed me. You hurt me. I'm like, I invented this game. I just got beat up by you.
And I won once with every color.
Yeah, that bothered me too. But I said to myself, it's too small of a sample size because I am holding on to, there's an advantage to a certain color. But we won't know that till later.
Whatever helps you sleep at night. They also brought up some other more generic, what I think of a little bit as physical presentation of the game that I think is not necessarily a blind spot for us, but hasn't gotten the same level of thought as, what do the pieces do? How's the board? How do we get tiles? It was interesting. They thought the cross at a glance that we were playing with, the cross being a vertical row of 3 tiles and a horizontal row of 3 tiles that overlap in the middle.
Great description. That was good.
It's my behavior land hat. One of the players thought that that would be the easiest one, and he wound up not winning the game, so he was pleasantly surprised.
I have said that I think it's the hardest one. I want to take it out of the game. And in fact, in the next version, it technically is out for the moment. Because I think it's very difficult to access and move that center piece. All the other things, like, they're on the outside of the shape. So it's, I don't know, I think it's tough. But again, it's one of those things, like, you need to play it 100 times.
I think it's tough, but it's also interesting in that I think different shapes might lend themselves to different strategies. And I think the strategy of the cross is to be less attached to the first location that you try to build the shape in.
Agree.
And the way that you focus on how you build it. I think the cross has a reasonable chance at winning the game, but it does require a different strategy in order to complete the shape compared to the other shapes, which I think is a good thing for the game. But some of the other physical components or physical aspects that they gave feedback about were making sure that the visual aid is really clear, and they were really specific in sharing there should be a drawing on the summary sheet of the shapes of how all the pieces move. So a visual representation of how the gray tile switches.
Yeah.
The rules text is clear, they said, but at a glance, they just want to be able to look and see the visual and shortcut to knowing the rule.
We can do that.
And then I will say, I think they gave feedback that to me was indicative of we have the game moving in a direction where the interest and enjoyable things in the game are in the right places. They enjoyed the mystery of not knowing what shape the other person had. They thought it was an interesting point of tension to be trying to puzzle it out. And one of the players even kind of said, depending on how familiar you are with the game, there's a decision point of whether or not I should even be trying to figure out what my partner is playing with, which to me was like, well, this gives it great replay value, because when I'm learning to play the game, I'm just going to be like trying to build my shape and like incidentally interacting with what my opponent is doing. But over time, as I build more of an eye for the game, I'll be able to develop that sense of trying to puzzle out what shape my opponent is playing with.
Yeah, that's that hidden percentage that I'm trying to figure out, that sweet spot.
But it felt promising to me to hear them say, even if I'm choosing to not try to solve what my opponent has, that still feels compelling, at least in the game they played. One game.
Yeah, it's good to hear though.
So that was cool. The other thing that I would just point out for listeners, or things that I'm taking away from having gone to Victory Point now, is I want to come back to that idea of we really need to know how to teach the game, because it very quickly can change, make, break, ruin your playtest if you teach the game in a way that doesn't get people playing with a high degree of accuracy and quickly enough.
We have to keep going to events. We got to keep playing with the friends and the family.
But you have to be teaching it to novel people.
Right.
So you got to go find different friends.
I met new friends.
Make new friends, Jason.
I haven't taken it to many people in person yet. So I've got a big group of people that I can take this to.
Jason's got all the friends.
I got them all.
I'm running out.
I think it's safe to say we're at the turn. We've talked a lot about the turn before. We thought we were at the turn with Animal Kingdom, and we were turning around and going, we were going another direction.
We turned the wrong way.
Yeah.
Or the right way.
I think it's safe to say now that we're at the turn for sure. We're past the turn. We're looking down the straightaway. We can see the first exposure playtest hall. It's not the end game, but it's the goal that we've been working towards for just about a year now. When we came back from Gen Con in August of last year, we said, that's where we want to be. How do we get there? What are we going to bring there? And we can see that now. Like, that's cool.
Abstract also very much falls into line with the way that Randy described the turn to us, which is where you start to respond to the thing in front of you, and not responding or theorizing about what the thing in front of you is going to be. There is a very concrete 3D printed physical representation of the thing that we are going to be responding to and having players respond to. And I think that more than some amount of mechanical understanding is the true criteria for what the turn is and indicative of us being there.
Let's go.
Let's go. To Gen Con.
To close the show.
Oh, I jumped the gun a little bit. The The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors. I really appreciate how you're trying to kind of like bring in the board game casual hands to your podcasting.
I did.
As you so like to remind me, Jason, we're a podcast. They can't see you.
I know, but it helps my inflection when I move my hands around.